Hey guys, reminder, the police union picnic's coming up this weekend. My wife's making her famous deviled eggs again. My waistline's furious.
It's a bad time, Bob.
All
right. Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I am Ross Bacon. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike McGuigan. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing?
And as you should know by now, we are a podcast that talks about beer, cars, bus, beer, movies, blah, blah, blah. Now, this week, we also have another guest, my lovely wife, Samara. I mean, Carrie. Hi, what's up, sweetie?
Hi.
Hi.
Good to be back.
Yeah, so she's going to join us to talk about our final Time Capsules week, so the 2010s, and we're going to be talking about Guns Akimbo, we're going to be talking about Tucker and Dale versus Evil, and then we're going to talk about the other guys. And before we do any of that, though, we have to talk about what we're drinking. So let's start with the guests. So, Han, what do you have?
Okay, so I'm drinking Zed's beer. It's Zed's In the Backyard Copper Cream Ale. And for a cream, you know, for the title, it doesn't really taste like a cream ale, but it is really smooth. It's really light, which I appreciate, because some craft brews can be really heavy. And we actually went in there to buy the beer in the brewery, and it's a pretty awesome brewery, and the people that run it are amazingly nice.
Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah. Very nice there, Zeds.
Oh, so I'm supposed to say it is 5.5%.
That is correct. All right, Mike, what you got?
All right, so I went with a tried and true with Bone Soul. This is a beer I've had a lot of times, but never really chose to review for some reason. It's Bone Saul's Shore Town. It's a Hell's Lager. And it is only about, I think it's like a 4.5% or still on the lower end, but it's one of those beers I could just drink a ton of. Like, in terms of like a drinking by the pool beer, I'm not sure you get better than it. It's also Bone Saw works for two of our movies this week to a degree.
Yeah, to an extent, yeah.
Yeah.
So all right, so yeah, and like Kara said, we went to Zed's, and the last time I did Zed's, I think I did like their Front Porch beer and their Irish Red, and they were both delicious. But while I was there last time, I saw that they had a Vietnamese style Saison. So I grabbed that, and I'm not going to try. I tried to look it up on Google Translate and hear the pronunciation. I think it's Mu Ten Chang is how it's pronounced. But in...
I'm not even going to try. Proceeds to try.
Right. I mean, I'm going to try. Oh, well. But yeah, it roughly translates to, well, at least according to Google, it translates to lemon pepper stick. But it's weird because it's not... At first, when you drink this, you're like, hey, this is a Saison. And then there's like different notes to it, like the lemon and the pepper. And it's like not like not like chili peppers, but like pepper, like salt and pepper.
Imagine Ross got it mistranslated and just kind of, because of the mistranslation, makes up lemon and pepper notes in his head.
Yeah. So, wow, I definitely taste it. They're definitely there. I promise you that. But...
I did taste it too. He's not making it up.
It is kind of crazy.
And we actually, the owners gave us tasters of these two beers before we purchased them. And it makes me want to go back to the brewery again, because as much as I'm liking the beer that I'm drinking, it was a little bit smoother out of the tap, I will say. So I would love to go there and sit and enjoy it.
It's a cool little place. They got like an outside area. They got the inside area. You got some cool looking t-shirts.
Where is Zed's again? That's near
over. It's in Marlton, and it's right off of 70, a little ways around the corner from Cherokee, basically.
Okay.
But it's right off 70. As you come up from Mount Laurel, come up Church Road.
For those of you who don't know what Cherokee is, that is a local high school, too.
Yeah. Area. Yeah. No, we're not. We don't have like a reservation or anything around here. But yeah, it's the local high schools in Medford and Marlton are named after Indian tribes or Native American tribes, I should say. And the one in Marlton is Cherokee High School. But yeah, it's a cool little place. It's a nice little shopping center that they're on the end of. And it's really good. But it's twofold reason I picked this, because I wanted to try whatever a Vietnamese style Saison was, because you usually get like your farmhouse Saison. But then also the fact that no one should ever forget that Mark Wahlberg assaulted an Asian guy. I believe he might have been Korean, but we're going to say he's Vietnamese for this, because it works for my beer. But yeah, Mark Wahlberg, when he was younger, man, assaulted a guy for no reason just because he was Asian. You know, it's kind of like the joke in the other guys. Like, why'd you learn to dance like that? It's like, well, we learned to dance like that to make fun of the guy at the street, show him how gay he was. You know, you learn to dance like that sarcastically. You know, it's kind of like that. But it is, either way, Zed's makes a good Vietnamese saison. So I'll be drinking that. Why don't we move on and talk about the final time capsule? So we're going to get to the action movie, which is Guns Akimbo, which is barely, if you go by its Toronto Film Festival release, it's 2019. So it's in the window. If you go by its American release, it's 2020, which whatever, we'll consider. We'll go with it. Who cares? And directed by a guy named Jason Howden, who did literally nothing else except this movie called Deathgasm, which just by title alone, I feel like I need to see.
That seems exactly like a movie Ross would want to see. I don't know if I'm going to say enjoy, but at very least want to see.
Absolutely. And then he also did, which is even weirder because he's usually a visual effects artist, and he has done visual effects on pretty much every major blockbuster since the dawn of time. You know, he has been involved in everything since.
Guns Akimbo is listed as 2019 on IMDb, so I'm going to say we're in the clear on that.
Yeah, why not? But yeah, this movie, it stars my wife, Samara Weaving. You're sorry, honey. But, and of course, everybody's favorite little wizard boy, Daniel Radcliffe.
You're goddamn right.
And
it also spawned one of the biggest memes ever, being Daniel Radcliffe with guns nailed into his hands in a bathrobe, pointing them down the street.
Yep. Yeah, and it's one of those movies. It's kind of like Crank, but insane. It's kind of like Crank meets Death Wish, essentially, like, or Death Race. I'm sorry, like Death Race.
Yeah,
and you throw a little bit of gamer in there, kind of too. Even though, like, the people watching,
It's really a more amped up version of, oh God, what's that movie that stars
the Running Man,
the not sexual assaulting Franco, Dave.
Dave. the not sexually assaulting Franco. I love it. I'm sure Dave would love to hear that too.
I know
exactly. Nobody forgets. Nobody forgets.
I know exactly what movie you're referring to. I just
God.
Is it recent?
Yes.
It also started a girl star that like started on Nickelodeon.
Dave Franco was the star of it?
Yes.
Yeah, he was the male lead. The girl is more
Nerve,
yeah. It's literally a more amped up version of Nerve.
As I say, it's like a modern Running Man too, as well.
But Nerve, it's like people have to complete dares to earn like viewers and points to get to this final thing, where the dares get dangerous, but it's not usually killing people.
Okay. So this is like Nerve meets Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like Fight Club, Death Race. It really is Death Race. Like it really, except for the fact that there's no actual race that takes place, but it's the same idea.
Well,
like,
it's really it's really similar to an anime and manga called Darwin's Game, which basically if you sign up for the app gives you a superpower and you have to fight other users, like other people challenge you to the death.
Interesting. But yeah, and then of course there is the current comparison. It's like Free Guy, but wildly violent. Yeah. Except, you know, the participants know that they're in a video game, I guess. And it's not a matter of self-discovery like, you know, Free Guy was.
It's like the Hunger Games without absolutely requiring child murder.
We should make this entire segment just us coming up with movies that it's like. And never actually talking about the actual movie.
Because the actual movie actually has considerably less action than I expected going into
it. Yeah, it's weird because there's two things about this movie that really are kind of crazy. One is that, yeah, there's not as much action as you would think, but the action that's there is crazy as hell.
Like, it's kind of like Hereditary in that the first I'm gonna keep doing it, Ross. It's like the first 70% of the movie you're like, huh, nothing's happening that much. Right. Like, he's mostly running away from things. We're seeing weird blue lights in Hereditary. Like, things are happening, and I'm expecting something more to happen. And then the last 30 minutes that you go like, holy shit, this is awesome.
Yeah, then the little girl's head gets knocked off, and things get knocked into like fifth gear. But what do you think about this movie, Hein?
So I liked it a lot more than I was expecting to. For
you
sure.
You loved Samara Weaving.
No, her acting was fine.
Which is always great.
Right. The bleached eyebrows bugged me. It bugged me the whole movie.
What about the
Samara, like, going into this week, I was like, wait, why did Ross say he can't wait to talk about Samara Weaving? I'm like, oh, she's in this.
Metal vampire teeth didn't bother me, but the bleached eyebrows really, like, throughout the whole movie, because she's a very, very pretty woman. And it was just getting to me.
It all worked for me.
I know.
All of it. Every part of it.
Yeah.
The vampire teeth especially.
All right, Samara Weaving could cosplay as Peter Griffin, and it would work for Ross.
Damn right it would, because she'd make it great.
Right. I really like Daniel Radcliffe in it. Like, he doesn't have a huge range, you know.
I think comedically he does.
Well, they're finding out that.
I
love something. Something came up where it was a meme suggesting a movie where the villain is going to be, or Daniel Radcliffe is going to play Elijah Wood, who is the villain, and Elijah Wood is going to play Daniel Radcliffe, who is the hero.
I'd love it. That would be great.
And it takes place at Comic-Con.
Of course. Why not?
Oh, he was the villain. Actually, yeah, he was the villain in Lost City.
Right.
I actually really enjoyed Lost City.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
It was fun.
It was fun. So I liked him in Guns Akimbo. This movie, I liked it. It was fun. Like Mike said, at the end, it had some great action. It's, you know, there is my one complaint that I have with a lot of action movies is there were so, at one point, Samara Weaving was, or Nyx was shooting so many bullets at Daniel Radcliffe. It's, how did one not hit him?
One of my favorite moments in this movie is when she's shooting up the office and the guy just hits her with a Nerf dart. He's like, I'm sorry, mistakes were made.
Yeah, that was really good.
You're right, after she suddenly pops the boss in the head.
Yeah.
But
why do you keep shooting guys in the dick?
That scene was great, where she just keeps shooting guys in the dick, even though they're dead. But
Cartman would not approve of her play style. That's right. Don't shoot a guy in the dick.
Yeah, but this movie also has, it's also forced to, since it's filmed in New Zealand, it's filmed in Auckland, it has to conform and obey the Rhys Darby law, which is every time you film a movie in New Zealand, he has to be in it. So he plays this homeless man in this who is, he's always great in everything he's in. He's especially funny when he's trying to feed Daniel Radcliffe the hot dog. And then he's like, well, it's not bad. It's not terrible. He's like, well, that's weird because it's been in here for 8 months.
I already helped you get dressed. What, do you want me to wipe your ass? Actually, that would be... No! No!
Because right. Yeah, he's introduced when Danny Reckler's trying to kill himself with the guns, which are bolted to his hands. And he's like, I wouldn't do that if I were you. He's like, what? Why not? He's like, well, first of all, the angles are wrong. You'll end up blowing your face off. Then you'll be even more depressed, you know, because of your fucked up face.
That's the comedy almost worked more for me in this movie than the action did.
It really did. It was really, there were a lot of very funny parts in this movie.
Though yeah, I do think so. I think you hit like a pretty slow pace in the middle of the movie where it's like really, they're like, well, you bolted guns to a pacifist's hands. Like, yeah, he's not going to use them.
Yeah. And it is funny to know that Daniel Radcliffe, like when he was reading the script and he got to the part where he has to take a piss with the guns bolted to his hands. And apparently that scene, he was like, yep, I'm in. Like, it's that scene that sealed it for him. It's like, all right.
Just don't shoot your dick off.
Just don't shoot your dick off.
Although I will say there was a lot of time spent on him trying to figure out how to function with guns bolted to his hands.
I mean,
like, yes, that would be a very big struggle. However, you know, there's only so much time in the movie to show that.
I'm really curious about a potential sequel because they left the door open for it, where we actually just get full-blown badass Daniel Radcliffe for the entirety of it.
They kind of like, well, they didn't do it because Squid Game came after this. They Squid Game the ending. You know, the ending of Squid Game is essentially the ending of this movie.
And, I mean, same with the Belko experiment.
Right. So it's this movie is like Squid Game, but with it's Daniel Radcliffe.
Like the Belko experiment.
It's like the Belko experiment. It's like Saving Private Ryan, but not a military movie.
It's like Escape from New York, but in New Zealand.
Right, it's Escape from Auckland.
Like Mad Max Fury Road, but with lots less vehicles and less desert.
There you go. Except it's in the general Australian area, so it works.
It's like The Notebook, but with more action.
I love what you clarified as more action. Like The Notebook and Guns Akimbo can potentially be confused for each other unless you looked at the level of action that was in it. James Garner reading to his Alzheimer's wife, just like Nixon, you know, and her childhood watching her family burn alive, you know. But she, and speaking of Samara, she does have one of my favorite lines in a movie where Daniel Radcliffe's character stumbles upon this drug deal and it's these two rival gangs and they're all pointing guns at him and everything like that because they think he's, you know, from the other side trying to fuck up the deal and all that. But she's up top and she comes up and it's like in like this like junkyard of sorts, you know, and she goes up on top of a higher place and she goes, first of all, no one is killing fuckboy here. And then Daniel Radcliffe just goes, yay! And she goes, except me, of course. And he's like, oh.
That's, she just keeps calling him fuckboy. He's like, why are you calling me fuckboy? I don't even know what that means. Right. That's, and which actually, when they actually start working together, I love it because they're like total opposites. And one thing this movie does really well is like the nerd to action star kind of transition. It goes a bit slowly at the start, but when it gets there, it's well earned.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you know, and we talked about it, I think, in the Ready or Not episode with her, with Samara. She, because she's Australian, I believe she is Australian, and her American accent, just however, like, I don't know if it's Southern California or California accent, whatever she's tried to perfect. A lot of people try to do like the half-assed like New York accent to try to sound American, but hers is much more West Coast. And so in Ready or Not, she hits fuck, like she hits the word fuck really well, like she nails the F and hits the hard K and all that. So in this, it's funny because at one point she gets her middle and ring finger shot off and she just yells, fuck, Friday night just got really lonely.
That was a good
I also
one.
Love when she goes, I have the power.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's weirdly enough, it gets like some like the clunky line like that. It's like, really? A He-Man reference in this? Okay, I guess.
When, I love when she starts complimenting the other girl's guns.
Yeah, the AR-22s or whatever it is.
So my single favorite moment in this movie is when Daniel Radcliffe meets a girl who recognizes him from Schism. It's just like, can I get a selfie? He's like, yeah, sure. And then immediately walks away.
He just walks. He just turns and walks. Yeah.
He does. He does have really good comedic timing. He does. And speaking of accents, he did really well with his American accent because he struggles with that in some movies. But this one, I only heard him like kind of slip back into his British accent like once, I think.
Yeah, it is hilarious that this is supposed to be in the United States, even though, except for the presence of some American flags, everything about it screams Australia or New Zealand. Like there's like this.
I wish they just went full blown, said this takes place in Auckland, and just everyone do New Zealand accents because that would have been way cooler, actually.
Right. I mean, yeah. Like the What We Do in the Shadows vampires easily could have walked through the background and like a couple of these scenes. Like that is so much not United States in this. But
I love that this whole thing happens because Daniel Radcliffe's favorite hobby is being a troll online, trolling other trolls.
trolling other trolls. Yeah.
He's a troll hunter.
He's just sitting there getting drunk and talking shit with all the trolls. Yeah, that was. And then they're like, here's your IP address, amateur. Yeah. And he's like, oh, fuck.
Right. I love how he like throws the laptop away. Like that somehow like it's hot now, you know, like.
That's what everyone always does in a movie when they think they've been hacked or something.
Yeah.
Just push the computer away like it didn't happen.
Right.
Turn now, it off quick.
It's a bad time, Bob.
It's a bad time, then, Bob.
But they're in, it's weird because like just the general like time, the reason we chose this as a time capsule movie for this period is that it's like, it's a fun, stupid movie. But really, since we eliminated Fast and the Furious, the Marvel movies, every comic book, because that's the 2010s.
And really John Wick, too, we kind of eliminated.
We'll be talking about him in a little bit, but in a little bit, a few weeks. But all the action movies of the 2010s to present have been the giant franchises. That's all they really have been. So this is more of a indie action movie of sorts, and it's really fun. Like it's not a masterpiece, but it's fun. And if it wasn't a John Wick movie, I think if you injected some humor, more humor into the John Wick movies, you may or may not get something that could kind of be in the Guns Akimbo universe. You know, it would, if you got some, if you got a little bit crazier, you might be able to get John into these movies.
That's, you know, if National Treasure, if we nailed guns to Nicolas Cage's hands, it'd be a lot like Guns Akimbo.
It'd be a lot. It's a Prisoners of the Ghost. This is Prisoners of the Ghostland, but with Daniel Radcliffe.
This is What's Eating Gilbert Grape, but with Daniel Radcliffe.
With less Johnny Depp.
Less Johnny Depp. And more guns.
This is Steel Magnolias, sure. Just with a lot more, where everyone has guns.
Right. Which would have made Steel Magnolias a watchable movie.
Stop it. I love that movie.
Watchable movie with guns.
No, that's a great movie.
Yeah. You bolt some guns to some hands. Perfect movie. So that's probably enough on Guns Akimbo. I mean, I got no much else to say other than I would probably be eventually getting beaten by my wife for just saying how much I love Samara Weaving, but everyone already knows that, so we don't need to keep going. But all right. So Karen, how's your beer?
It's good. I'm almost done actually. So it's very easy to drink, very smooth. And it's very light. So I'm really enjoying it.
Smooth and light.
Smooth and light.
Cool. Mike.
I'm moving through my beer pretty quickly too. It's described as easily crushable, which I would agree with. Bone Soul does a good job with pretty much I almost never had a bad beer from Bone Soul.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. But my Vietnamese Saison from Zed's, I'm on number two. And it is like the bartender there told us, she's like, every time you drink this, you're going to taste something new. And I was like, okay. So yeah, it's true. It really is.
Is it gummy bears?
I don't know. It's weird, but I'm definitely getting the lemon and the pepper in there. This isn't like a.
It's lemon pepper gummy bears.
Yeah, that's what it is. Okay. There is a sweetness to it, a gummy bear sweetness almost.
Oh, speaking of Harry Potter, it's like the every flavor jelly bean.
That's right. Yeah, but no earwax. Dumbledore's favorite. So, on to the horror movie. Well, quote-unquote horror movie, because it's one of the best horror comedies ever made. And it's Tucker and Dale versus Evil from 2010. Directed by Eli Craig, who did literally nothing else. And this movie...
That's fine. Go in hot, leave hot. Fine.
Yeah. And that's the thing, they were going to do, or there was a thought of Tucker and Dale versus Evil 2 at some point. But to hear Alan Tudyk and Tyler Labine talk about it, the script was god-awful. So they were like, no, we're not doing this. We're not even going to try to work on it until someone figures this shit out. And apparently, obviously, no one has figured it out. But at the same time, they're also like, we don't want to ruin the legacy of the first one by doing a shitty second one. So why don't we just leave it be? And of course, now that Alan Tudyk is Disney's like Frank Welker, he doesn't need to be doing these movies anymore. So he might as well wait for it to be good. You know?
I can't say enough good things about this movie. I absolutely love it. I feel like it should be way more of a cult classic than it actually is, because I talk to people and I'm like, well, yeah, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And they're like, what's that?
This does get like, when I think of this era of horror comedies, this is easily the least popular, because you have like Cabin in the Woods, which everyone loves to point to as being like that meta horror comedy. Then you have Zombieland, which I think has a bigger following than this movie.
Yeah.
But this one's the best one. I would say this is the best of the three.
This was also Zombieland was also made at like the peak of the zombie trend. Zombies took over everything for a good, 5 to 10 years.
Which honestly, Zombieland was a refreshing zombie movie, because it did like what a good horror comedy does, is it breathes a kind of a new life into it.
Yeah,
because they're like meta about it.
And this is literally Cabin in the Woods, but with like the more rednecky versus preppy slobs versus snobs kind of side of a lot of the backwoods horror genre, I love the fact, well, we gotta get into it, Katrina Bowden. She's from Wyckoff. She's from Wyckoff, New Jersey, and apparently spent some time in Washington Township, too. So that's she's a Jersey girl. But once this movie's great, because it's a very slow burn to start. But once the suicide pact starts to kick in, the deaths start to kick in, once that guy is running next to Tucker and they both lock eyes, like, wait, you're not chasing me? And then he's impaled on the stick and he sees the bee land on his nose, and there's this little moment of like realization on this kid, like, oh, he was running from the bees, and then he dies.
That's this movie, like the idea that just a misunderstanding can just cause this so many events to happen.
Right. And the fact funny. That the creepy rednecks, or the quote unquote creepy rednecks, because they're very nice, they're actually end up to be the good guys instead of, the serial killers.
I love the "we have your friend." We have your friend.
We have your friend. They carve it with the axe and the hatchet into the log, and he spells friend wrong.
Yeah.
I just like when he's like, she just can't stop hitting her head. And getting knocked unconscious.
That's what the helmet is, the gift at the end.
That's, I think, the idea that just so many coincidences causes these events is better than like having a secret organization purposely causing the events. Like, obviously it lends itself more to comedy, because this is very much comedy horror. It's hardly horror, actually.
the only horror aspect of it is the gore level and just the, like, the fear of the college kids, like, perceiving Tucker and Dale as these like redneck maniacs and all that.
Yep. I love that lead dickhead's name is just Chad.
Yeah. And speaking of him, they picked the perfect, like, I hate the actor that they picked, but that's kind of the point, because he's the douchebag of the movie.
Yeah.
So you just really, you just, I don't know. There's something about him I can't stand. But
it's his face.
It's his face.
Jesse Moss is the actor, and it's his face. It really is.
That's what it is.
He looks almost like a douchier version, like a younger, douchier version of what's his name from
He's from
in Step Brothers. He's in
Adam.
Not McKay.
No,
Adam Scott.
Adam Scott, that's it.
Adam McKay is the director of other guys.
He looks like a younger Adam Scott. And with, like, Adam Scott's face is just so punchable.
The actor's name in Road Trip that I'm thinking of? Breckenmeyer. He kind of reminds me of, like, a douchey version of him.
Kind of. Yeah.
No matter who it is, it's a douchey version of that person.
This is just the episode of comparisons.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not actually going to talk about literally anything.
It's the simile episode of Happy Hour Films.
Well, yeah, I love... I love the whole thing that gets started. Like, they initially look at them like creepy rednecks, but then Dale goes up to talk to the girl, and he's carrying a scythe.
This gigantic scythe.
just for no reason. There's right. no, he just picks it up, no reason at all.
Well, no, they purposely buy it because they're going to use it at the cabin because they're refurbishing the cabin.
Right.
He's going to use it to clear brush, he says.
Right.
But yeah, he there's no reason for him to be holding it. He's
talking to the women. Bring it with him, right. yeah, on the walk over.
Right.
Which I love Alan Tudyk as Tucker because he's just so supportive of Dale. He's
they're great together. They really have amazing chemistry on screen. Like,
Dale is so much the emotional center of the movie, which is very funny to say in a spoof of a slasher movie. But Tucker is just like the supportive best friend. He's like, man, you're better than you think you are. Like, you got to have confidence.
Yeah, and when he says that he's hopeless, he doesn't mean it like in a mean way. He's just kind of like, oh, man, you're hopeless with this, you know? But and like any other movie, it'd be like Tucker be like, oh, you fucking idiot, you know, you're hopeless, man. Why don't you just kill yourself? Kind of thing. But you tell these two dudes like really are just like good friends. They're like best friends. And it's the performances that are great. Cause Tyler Levine as Dale just makes him like this big dumb teddy bear and he's great. Whereas Tucker's got this weird, he's got this sort of like he's bewildered the whole time because he has no idea what's happening or why these kids are doing this.
Or why his fingers got chopped off.
Right. His bowling fingers. But then he also has this look on his face sometimes like he could be a menacing psychopath redneck too. Like he's
but he it's that really, line really he just well. Kind of has resting bitch face.
Yeah, essentially.
And he has like that dead eye stare.
Mm. Yeah. That's just Alan Tudyk.
Right. Right.
It's so great because there's also one love part of this movie because the college kids, because they have to, they go skinny dipping at one point. And even that is like a send up of the gratuitous nudity in a horror, in a, like a slasher movie that's like this. But there are a pair of boobs in this movie by Chelan Simmons or Chelan or whatever. She's also one of the
Final Destination 3.
Yeah, she's the tanning bed, one of the tanning bed that's in that movie. Yeah, and she's topless in that as well. But she's topless in this. The only thing is, though, she's out of focus.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. They're not real.
Wait,
they're not real.
I'm not discussing the realness of them. I'm talking about the fact that we're not focusing on them.
I mean, they're very nice, but they don't look real. They don't look natural.
I love how my wife is the one that's bringing up the quality of her tits as opposed to the reason why they're being shown.
I feel like anybody can appreciate tits. It's not just a man thing.
Yeah.
It's 2022, hon. Yeah, wake up.
That's not why I brought it up.
Right.
But it was the showing the subverting of the cliche because you don't see them up close. Any other movie, they'd be like front and center. Even fucking Airplane, there are front and center tits right in front of the camera. And that's the joke that they come out of nowhere. But this one, it's like, we're doing this, but we're not really doing this at the same time.
So for anyone who's never seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil, Dale is very reminiscent of, if you've watched Letterkenny, he's very similar to like Squirrely Dan in Letterkenny, but less educated.
Okay. But he does have that weird brain thing.
Yeah.
He's got a photographic memory, but he has no way of controlling it or no way of using it.
One of the real standouts that I wasn't, that going into it, like you almost wouldn't expect her to be, would be Katrina Bowden.
Yeah.
She's great. Awesome in the role that she's given.
Yeah. If you don't know her from this, you might know her as Siri from 30 Rock. She's the page, I think, or she's the assistant or something like that. She's not the page. She's an assistant, I think. But she does, like, basically her joke in that is basically just being hot and young. And I think that's kind of the gag that they're going with that.
Like, you go into this, you're expecting, like, okay, Tucker and Dale are going to be, like, the focal points and, like, they're always going to steal the scene. But the way she is with Dale is awesome. Like, they make her so genuinely likable.
Yeah, yeah, and like you believe that she actually is starting to like, you know, she could be, you know, she could like just fall in love with Dale or whatever, but
because you do, the character that he's portraying, you do start to like kind of fall in love with him. Like
now, the one thing that would like as soon as she's okay, she's not staying in the cabin. She's like, thank you for taking care of me. I'm gonna go back to my friends. I appreciate it.
Yeah, there is a certain amount of like movie mishaps or like movie fantasy actions that have to take place because she really would just walk out and be like, hey, guys, they're cool. This has been a weird misunderstanding. Like, you're being psychotic, especially you, Chad. Something weird going on with you, buddy. But like all of her friends, she'd be like, look, it's cool, they're fine.
See, no, I disagree.
Like, I fell in, I hit my head, I wasn't coming up. They rescued me.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, like, I don't know if recently, like, Kara sent it to me, but have you seen the meme of Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness where they're just kind of talking? And yeah. Strange, she's like, give me Marika Chavez, I'm going to steal her power. She's like, well, why don't we, he's like, why don't we teach her? And then we can just find a universe where Wanda's dead and you can just take over from there. She's like, oh, wow. That's a great idea. Let's just do that. And then it's like Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness.
Or she says, I'm glad we could resolve this peacefully.
Right.
No, but what I'm saying with her is she, like, though they make it believable that she could actually fall in love with Dale, I'm saying as soon as she wakes up, she's probably going back, like offering to stay, like, stay, relax, rest. She's probably gonna be like, thank you for taking care of me, but I would be more comfortable going back to my friends now.
Yeah,
see, that's where I disagree, Steve, because she has suffered a head injury. Mm-hmm. So she's waking up, she's still fuzzy, hurt. You got to imagine that her head hurts, and then he also comes in, and the thing that really, and it's perfect the way they do it, because he brings her in breakfast,
pancakes.
Yeah, it's not eggs, it's pancakes.
That's the second breakfast he brings, because she freaks out because she doesn't know what's happening, and he thinks it's because she doesn't like pancakes.
That's right. Okay. So I think she would. I think she would be like, wait a second, because that immediately tells her, okay, these people are not scary. They're giving me, you know, they're nice enough to cook me food. Like, I don't think
there's offers of playing Trivial Pursuit.
Right.
Yeah.
Trivia Pop, I think is what they call it, because... Yeah. I guess we didn't license Trivial Pursuit. But, yeah, I mean, and then just that stuff aside, like, the actual, like, the deaths of the college kids are so great. They're so, that the whole sequence from when the kid dives into the wood chipper, which is the best death in the movie, when he dives into that wood chipper, and then everything after that, it is just pure comedic gold. It's like
my favorite line of the whole movie. It's not the entire line, but it's just, oh, Heidi Ho, officer, we've had a doozy of a day.
right.
He's like, what am I supposed to say, Dale? Go up to the police and say, hey, we've had a doozy of a day. And then he ends up using that line. It's great.
You have to
be such a great callback.
And I love the conclusion where he's like, well, obviously they're in some crazy suicide pact. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
You have to be a fucking moron to believe that, which is the same thing Tucker tells them. He's like, you have to be a fucking moron to believe that shit. But yeah.
Especially since at one point it's just them killing each other accidentally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah, with the
Chad lights the guy on fire.
The weed whacker to the face.
Yeah.
The weed whacker to the face. Dude gets lit on fire. Chandler Simmons just wants to smoke a cigarette, so she's sitting by like a bunch of gas cans and a fire, you know. So she blows up when the house goes up.
Yeah. And then you get the first two college kids dying, which are just total accidents, where one just runs into the stake and one jumps into the wood chipper, and Tucker's just like, what the fuck?
Right. The best is he tries to pull him out. But then there's also the kid that runs at him with the sharpened stick.
Yeah.
And like he dives at him, and like Tucker's got like a Dale just got turns, and he whacks out Katrina Allie. Bowden Allie. He whacks Allie with the shovel. He trips and falls, and the guy like nails, he like kind of javelins himself like over Dale. And it's just like the whole time he's like, what is happening? What the hell is happening?
Is that also where he says, this is the one time I never thought I'd say this, where I'm glad I'm not hung like a bear?
That's when he goes to save Tucker, and it's a trap, and there's like a spring-loaded like stick or whatever comes right between his legs.
Yeah. Which for uppity college kids, they certainly know, you know, to set up an elaborate trap like that is...
Well, it's all
fairly impressive.
Where he leans against the thing and the spike board just comes down. Yep. And hits him in the
face. Yeah,
I told you we should have fixed that board. But yeah, this movie is just, it's Well, I think my favorite line in it comes from Dale. He's talking to Allie, and he just says, "I should have known that if a guy like me talked to a girl like you, somebody'd end up dead."
And we didn't even talk about the backstory for Chad.
Yeah, Chad is he's the son of a redneck maniac killer, and
no, at first he thinks it's his mom.
Right,
that was attacked, like who was the victim of the first massacre.
Yeah, he doesn't know he's the son until there's a very convenient newspaper article that shows up at the end, and it's a very clear shot of his father, who is him in a beard.
That's the other thing that's funny about when they go in. It's like the cabin was clearly owned by the previous redneck murderers.
Right,
bones hanging. Everyone's like, huh. They must have been an archaeologist.
What a news junkie this guy was. What he says.
Hey, look at that. Notice the no expiration date.
Yeah, the hot dog coupon. this movie is just, it's such a great horror comedy. And obviously there are other horror movies we could have picked. Like, we could have picked Hereditary or Midsommar, but we already talked about
Midsommar. Or Get Out,
something like that. But I think this movie, because there's a lot of, even Get Out to an extent, is a very meta movie. Like, it makes its own commentary on basically what's happening, and obviously horror as a whole. But this is just a far more comedic Scream, essentially. So, because it makes the meta commentary, makes it comments on itself, it makes the jokes about itself, while also being the movie that it's sending up, you know, which is the same thing Scream was.
Which I'm going to say that this is the second best horror comedy of all time. Shaun of the Dead's number one.
Of course.
But, I like this so much better than Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, you don't like the British.
Oh, that's it. I just hate an entire country.
Yeah, you do.
You know, just really don't like Simon Pegg, don't you? You're Simon Pegg's number one hater.
There are two things in this world I can't stand. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures and the Dutch.
Yeah, that's you.
I will say this about the movie, though, what's great about it is it literally has everything. It's the horror movie. It's got, you know, of course, the gratuitous gore and even a nudity scene. It's got all the tropes of a horror movie, but it's also a comedy, or it's mainly a comedy, I should say. It has a love story. The story has a twist at the end. Like, there's literally, it hits every genre of movie all wrapped into one. It's fantastic.
I do. Also, the burn makeup for Chad at the end is pretty badass. Like, I thought that was pretty good burn makeup.
Very Aaron Eckhart Two-Face. But, so that's enough Tucker and Dale. Why don't we get our final beer check in, hon? How's your beer?
Still enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, though, your beer, because when we went into Zed's and they gave us a taster of each of the beers that we were getting, yours was not my favorite, although they did warn that it's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah. But this beer that I'm drinking now, for those of you that forgot, it's the Copper Cream Ale, makes me want to try more beers from them.
Yeah. Mike?
I am about three of these in already. And yeah, you can just... Shoretown from Bonesaw, you can absolutely crush them. Like, they're so light and just kind of refreshing.
That cool, refreshing drink. And my Vietnamese Saison from Zed's, still great. Still tasting new stuff each time. And all right, so final one, we got to get to the comedy. 2010's The Other Guys, directed by Adam McKay. Now, if you don't know Adam McKay, I don't know what you've been doing for the last 20 years, because he's been doing every comedy you've ever loved. And recently, though, he does every shitty Oscar movie you've ever loved. Don't Look Up, chief among them. Now, this movie is obviously Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell are the other guys in a New York police precinct. And it's fucking great. it's hilarious.
You should have shot A-Rod.
Right. He's a biracial angel.
And also for my own fun and entertainment, and hopefully all of yours too, I came up with some quiz questions to see exactly how well Ross and Mike know the other guys because they both claim to have seen it, you know, quite a few times. It's one of their favorites. So we're going to see how well they know it.
All right. I'm up to the challenge, I think.
I came up with some pretty good questions. Some are easy, but some are a little tricky.
Yet I don't see those questions out, and I don't see you ready to quiz us.
Well, I thought we were going to talk about the movie first.
Why don't we just do the quiz first?
Because I thought we were going to talk about the... Okay.
You know, is this your podcast or ours?
I've been on it a lot of times.
Not enough. But yeah, so we're going to get this quiz out of the way right now. Because I don't know what the hell it's about.
Okay, so who wants the first question?
Mike does.
All right.
In the place
I can speak for myself, Ross.
What?
I can speak for myself.
Oh.
He's his own man.
Okay.
In the police precinct, what is Terry's screensaver?
Oh, that's not something I'm paying attention to.
Wait, his screensaver or his background?
His screen, or it's the only thing on the computer screen that you say.
I know what it is.
I don't.
The shark coming out of the water.
It's a great white shark. Yeah. let's see.
And that is, of course, before he picks up his computer and smashes it on the ground for no reason other than he's bored.
Okay. Now, the reason why the captain works at Bed Bath & Beyond is to put his son through NYU. He's putting his son through NYU to quote unquote do what?
Explore his bisexuality.
Right.
And?
Oh, become, shit.
A fashion designer for dogs or something?
It's something like
simpler,
that.
Simpler than that, though.
He just wants to, fuck. I don't remember.
Explore his bisexuality and become a DJ.
Become a DJ. That's it. Yeah, yeah.
I told you, I came up with some good questions.
Yeah.
Why
it's a bad time, Bob.
It's a bad time, Bob.
Why does Alan originally think David Urshan is suspicious?
Why does he originally think he's suspicious? Because of the scaffolding permits?
Yes.
Yeah.
He didn't like his hair.
Right. Yeah, Steve Coogan. Steve Coogan is so great as David Urshan. He's so good.
Okay. So when Alan meets Sheila, why does he
Sheila.
No, when Alan meets Sheila.
Hi, Sheila.
When he goes to the ER where she is a resident, what does he go into the ER for?
He has poison ivy in his rectum.
Yep. Apparently.
They never say why.
Yeah. Apparently after a bad night of being a pimp. A long night
you
of pimping.
A pimp. I was not a pimp. Where are you getting that from?
Right. I was just helping a friend in a rough time in college.
Okay, they started to call really me Gator. One, but maybe people in your audience have not seen this a million times like you guys have. But I'll ask this one to Mike. What is Alan's ex's name?
Christina.
When you come to my house, you get my wife's name right.
There's also another ex that's briefly mentioned. A famous TV actor.
Oh, yeah. It's... Oh, God, why can't I think of her name?
Oh, McPherson?
No.
It's
Heather Locklear.
Yeah, Locklear. Heather Locklear.
All right. Ross.
Yes.
What gift does Alan give Terry?
What gift?
He gives him a gift.
Oh, it's the federal breast inspector mug.
It's the FBI mug. FBI mug. It's the female body.
Female body inspector. Body inspector. That's what it is. Yeah, and he throws it. He just throws it out the window.
All right, this one could. I don't know. Could go either way. It could be easy or tough. Mike, what does Alan say he wants to do after the bomb goes off in the accounting firm?
So he says, "I have soft tissue damage. I need to." He needs to see some kind of doctor.
An MRI, yeah, but...
I need an MRI.
But there's also something else that he says right after that. Ross, do you know it?
I feel like at one point he just yells, "I just want to die." I think he says that.
No.
Because it's after the, how do they walk away from movies so in this coolly in movies? It's right. Really loud.
He says, "I just Star Wars was bullshit. Don't you dare."
Right.
He said, I just want to go somewhere and breastfeed.
That's right. He does.
All right, let's see.
And just, oh, and for notice, we watched, Mike, did you watch it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay, so we all watched the regular theatrical version. I have the Blu-ray with the unrated, but we didn't put it. We just happened to watch it all. And this is all, these are all answers pertain to the theatrical version, which I'm sure there are a couple differences.
Which I've seen the unrated version too.
Well, the unrated version has a little more of Derek Jeter because he's apparently a police informant as well. Yeah. Like undercover police informant.
So you guys spoiled one of my questions, was who did Alan lose his virginity to, which was Heather Locklear.
Heather Locklear.
And then I have one more question before we get to the music round.
It's a bad time, Bob.
How many men are in the group Dirty Mike and the Boys?
Oh, Dirty Mike and the Boys. There's Dirty Mike.
Right.
And I think there are five boys. I think there are five boys.
My guess was going to be six or seven total.
No, it's four.
Four?
There's Dirty Mike and three other guys?
Yeah.
I thought there was a bunch of dudes. Like when they're outside, when they're running away yelling, "We will have sex in your car again. It will happen." I thought there was like a group of them.
I mean, there's only four of them lined up around the car.
Huh. Okay.
You know what? We may have to go to the movie.
And Dirty Mike, played by director Adam McKay.
Nice.
Yeah. We will have sex in your car. It will happen. Call that a soup kitchen.
Okay. Now, the music round.
All right.
What song plays during the bar montage where Terry and Alan get
the slow motion one, right? Yes. Where they're like, where Alan's pitching off the table and all that?
Yes.
It's a Black Eyed Peas song or a Fergie song? It's definitely Fergie. I don't know their songs well enough, and it's not one of her hits.
I mean, it's really like the only thing they say throughout the entire song.
I'm a B on the next whatever.
It's I'm a B.
I'm a B. That's the name of it.
Yeah.
Is it Fergie or is it Black Eyed Peas?
Black Eyed Peas.
Okay. Yeah. That's it's just bad enough to be theirs. Hers were kind of catchy. Their songs suck.
All right. It's a tough one.
Add them to my list from my rant from last episode. See the middle of last episode if you want to hear my rant on music.
This is a really tough one.
Uh-oh.
Alan plays music in case Terry's apartment is bugged when he goes to tell him that he cracked the case.
Oh.
What song is playing?
Shit.
Right?
Oh, damn it. I know
I'm
it,
so I bad at like paying attention to music.
I know, but I can't think of it. I can't think of the damn name of it.
Mike, you that suggested the music Oscar movies? He had us watch two movies about music, about a deaf drummer, which
that was Whiplash. Sound of Metal.
And then Whiplash was the other one.
Oh yeah, no, I enjoy movies about music, but I'm bad at paying attention to music like during scenes.
To the as the kids call it nowadays, the needle drops.
Okay. Do you want me to just tell you?
Yeah.
It's Against All Odds. Parentheses, Take a Look at Me Now. And parentheses by Phil Collins.
Right, right. Because it's like the chorus that comes in when they go under. He's like, first of all, I missed you. It's good to see you.
Gator needs his gat, bitch.
Right.
And then the final question. And Ross, you already know the answer to this. So I'm going to ask Mike.
I do.
Let's see. What TLC songs does the captain quote? And there are, do you want me to tell you how many there are?
I don't need no scrubs. Don't go chasing waterfalls. Creep.
Nobody says creep, creep, unless they're quoting TLC. Yeah.
I want to say there's three, but there might be four.
There is a fourth.
There's a fourth one.
It's like right after the creep, creep one.
Oh, which one is it? Why can't I think of it?
Ain't Too Proud to Beg.
Yeah, I'm too proud to beg. Come on. You got to be doing it on purpose. But yeah.
So that is the end of the other guy's quiz.
Good job, honey. That was fun. That was a good one.
how many Little River Band CDs does Alan keep in his car?
He always keeps one ready to go.
One more than you think he has is the correct answer.
LRB. LRB.
If we're gonna get into talking about the movie, Neil, I have to jump right in and talk about the beginning of it.
Oh, what with
Samuel L. Jackson and The Rock.
Yeah. Dancing Highsmith.
I could watch an entire movie of just that.
I'm actually shocked we never got that. Yeah. Like, I am shocked that we never got that movie. I mean, because we're talking, this is 2010, The Rock. Mm-hmm. He's skinnier and he's got hair. Like, this was the era of The Rock's career where he would do literally, it's also an era of his career where he could be fallible. You know, Danson dies in the beginning of this movie.
Very beginning of the movie.
He dies because he's an idiot. You try to get The Rock nowadays to even kind of do that line, that role. There's no fucking way he would do it. That egomaniac.
And the fact that Samuel Jackson was totally on board, and he is a way more established actor.
Samuel Jackson will be down to do whatever, man. Like, did you see him recently? He's like, I don't want to do Oscar shit. I said, I want to play Nick Fury, motherfucker. You know?
He's like, I want to do the fun movies.
Right.
Yeah, this movie. So the Danson and Highsmith dying almost immediately.
Okay. Speaking of music, what song is playing when they die?
I know it.
What is it?
It's Foo Fighters.
What song?
Hero.
Hero.
Yeah, there goes my hero. Splat. No,
not you.
Aim for the bushes.
What bushes? There wasn't even an awning or anything.
I love the thud and the crack of the concrete.
I love how they're discussing it at, like, their funeral. But the best part is, like, when they had that look, and they look at each other like, aim for the bushes? Yeah. And then they jump, and you'll see it, and you're like,
there's no bushes.
What bushes? What bushes are they talking about?
Free hot dogs for life. No drinks. I can't do drinks.
Everybody boos them.
Yeah, I can't do it. Sorry. But you want to talk about, like, Mark Wahlberg, especially in this movie, is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, what happened to this Mark Wahlberg? Why isn't he ever this Mark Wahlberg again? Is it the Rock situation? Is it his fucking ego?
I can answer that in two words. The Happening.
Again, that was before this.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that's where
he... That was 2008, I think.
Yeah, that was before this.
Oh, I thought that's where he totally started to go downhill.
But this Mark Wahlberg is, like, actually acting, you know? Yeah. He's actually acting as Terry. He's, for one, not a Boston cop. He's a New York cop, so not much of a stretch. But he gets rid of the Boston accent for the most part. But he's, like, this unhinged lunatic. But he's this buffoon as well. And Mark Wahlberg simply will not allow it to happen. But also
somehow totally competent in certain situations.
Right. He's crazy competent. he's like hand-to-hand combat, like John Wick, essentially.
Imagine what your career would be if you never shot Jeter.
Right. And that's the thing. He knows, like, he sarcastically learned the ballet dance, like, perfectly.
And play the harp.
And play the harp. All kinds of shit. But
wow, Terry, that was actually really good.
Right. There is no, again, there's no universe in the multiverse of madness where Mark Wahlberg plays this character again. And it's fucking sad. It's just depressing. It's so good.
It's like great universes. So there might be.
I don't know. It's like The Rock playing a villain, or a villain that's not a hero, you know, because Black Adam, guess what? Villain's going to be a hero in that movie.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
It's The Rock. Come on. He can't be a bad guy anymore.
Yeah, this movie, I also love the bit where they keep going to David Urshan's office and he keeps bribing them with tickets.
Different types of water.
You totally undersold it. Jersey Boys was a masterpiece.
It's like, there's one where Alan's sitting there with a glass of water and there's a big toothpick with a piece of red pepper, like, wrapped around
it. It's like cucumber water.
Right. I was like, okay, cucumber, like, kind of goes with water, but red pepper? Like,
and Terry's like, no water. And he's like, I was looking forward to the water.
Right.
I was like, Oh, I thought you said bad cop, bad cop. And I saw how you went in. I was just like, you want to talk to me?
Completely insane cop. Yeah. Man. Now, I mentioned it briefly before that with Adam McKay and his comedies are great. Like Anchorman is a legendary movie. And recently what he's done essentially is just make these like preaching movies at you that are supposed to be entertainment kind of thing. He's become like a fictional, like a movie director, kind of like Michael Moore, but for fictional movies, not documentaries. And he's so up his own ass with his fucking political views nowadays that like Don't Look Up is fucking awful. It's terrible. And it's nothing but this condescending, like, aren't we better than you for having this opinion type of vibe to this movie? This movie, on the other hand, has that same exact idea about big business and too big to fail, all that stuff, but it's not as heavy-handed. Like, the only thing you get is that end credits where it's just legitimate statistics that are quoted. And you go, oh, so this is over the end credits. These are some statistics. It's just like, oh, look how fucked up these things were. But it's not like watching, like Don't Look Up, where the whole time you feel like he's just smacking you in the face and saying climate change is real. We have to pay attention to this. And you're a fucking idiot if you don't think it is.
I will cut your ear off with a butter knife. That's dull. Dull's worse than sharp.
Right. It's bad time, Bob.
This movie is endlessly quotable.
Absolutely. And there's even more in the unrated version. Like there's more stuff in the unrated version.
Who do they say it looks like it looks like someone sneezed on your car?
Oh, Scarface.
Scarface, that's it.
Let's say Scarface sneezed on your car. Is this a Prius? Yeah. Good mileage? Yeah. Does it come with a dental dam? Yeah, Rob Riggle and Damon Wayans Jr. are fucking great. Well,
that was the next thing I was going to say about this movie is the casting's brilliant.
It's so good.
It's so good because Michael Keaton is the captain.
Keaton.
Even though the lines that they gave him were terrible, he made them funny.
Because he's Michael Keaton. You know, he's just so good.
Shake your dicks. This pissing contest is over.
And I do love the look because they all give him that look like, wow, great line. He's got that look like, I pulled it off, didn't I? I pulled it off, right? It's like, I nailed it, right?
Which I also love, like, the fight at the funeral where they're, like, whisper fighting.
Yeah.
He's like, you guys pull it together. Get it together. It's a funeral. But he has, of all the lines in this movie, of all the by Sheila's, and like that, seriously, who is that? You know, all this stuff that Mark Wahlberg says, I'm a peacock, he gotta let me fly, all that shit. My favorite line comes from Michael Keaton, and it is when he's at Bed Bath & Beyond. He's giving the little warm-up speech and all that, and then he lets it slip. He's like, we got a rapist in Crown Heights. Oh, sorry. No, that's from my other job. Ignore that. Well, not if you live in Crown Heights, then walk in Paris. Hey, Alan, you here for the bath mats?
I also love when Urshan is telling the Australian guy that's not a bodyguard that like all the people that are attending the meetings, he's like, you're in debt to the Chechens.
Right. The Nigerian princes as well, yeah. And Ray Stevenson is that guy, and he's such like an intimidating dude. So I was like, yeah, but he's also fairly funny. Like he's pretty funny when he does the whole there are three things I love in this world: Kylie Minogue, the small dimples just above a woman's buttocks, and the fear in a man's eyes just before he knows I'm about to hurt him. That's where you get the, hey, shake your dick, this pissing contest is over. But it's like, yo, she said you can let me go and everything will be fine. Heard the whole thing, mate. And Francis is his earpiece, like, heard the whole thing.
And Hache plays the bitch.
Anne Hache is Lendl, is head of Lendl Global.
Which we listen to another podcast. We're not going to advertise for other podcasts here, but podcast we listened to had her on as a guest, and she got up and left mid podcast and was like, because really got into it. It was Doug Loves Movies.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I didn't remember that at all.
She and Doug got into it, and she's like, fuck this, I'm out. And Sandra Oh, who was in the movie that she was, you know, that she was part of, had to finish the interview. And was it was super awkward the whole time.
I haven't listened to all those movies in forever, so yeah, I don't remember.
No, but I just remember it because she always seems like she always plays a bitch.
And you know where she got it from?
Because she's a bitch.
No, fucking Dating Ellen. Yeah, she was probably great until she used Ellen for her career, and then I bet Ellen, no pun intended, rubbed off on her. Everybody got that? Yeah.
It sounds like the line Michael Keaton was given in The Other Guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lesbian joke. You get it?
Now, one of my favorite lines in this movie is when Keaton's like, the paperwork is like Bob's wife here. It's thick, ugly, and has Danson's fingerprints all over.
No offense, Bob.
No offense, Bob.
No offense, Bob. I just love the look of Bob's face. It's kind of like, yeah. It's been a time, Bob. But and then of course, you know, I gotta have my creep moment. I had it with Samara, I had it with my wife. Then there's Eva Mendes in this movie, who, like, we've coined the term, and we've copyrighted the term fuck you hot. She is like white hot fuck you hot, you know. It's she is insanely beautiful.
That's why she's married to Ryan Gosling.
That every attractive woman in this movie is attracted to Will Ferrell.
Right. Yeah. And there's no idea why, and he doesn't even realize it. Yeah. And with Ava Mendes,
yeah, I love when Terry's like, even the chick with the bodyguards
was giving you the
serious doomy eyes. The boy's like, I'm all right, you're gonna meet my wife. I'm gonna warn you ahead of time. She's a big old broad, and she likes to wield it. You know, it's like, really, Eva Mendes.
Right.
Okay,
you're dressed like a hobo. Like,
that outfit that would score like a 4 in my fashion app.
Right. Yeah. You are being awful. Pimps don't cry.
I like when she's telling Terry. She's like, I tell Alan to come home safe every day. She grabs her boobs. She's like, these are yours. They're waiting for you. And Mark Wahlberg just goes, you're a nice lady.
You're a real nice lady.
That's my favorite line, I think, of the movie. Or one of them.
Bye, Sheila. Bye, Terry. Yeah, whatever, Alan. Bye, Sheila.
Bit at the end where Terry asked Sheila to be his best man.
She declined.
Actually, my favorite line in the movie doesn't connect to anything else in the movie, but it just makes me laugh every time because of Mark Wahlberg's face. It's when they're at Christina's house and Christina and Alan go to check the phone, and her husband's there just like kind of leaning on the couch. He's like, from the looks of me, you might think I'm hairy, but I'm completely shaved.
Ryan Wahlberg just kind of goes, Alan? And Brett Dillman is that actor. He's on Stranger Things now. He's even funny on that.
You come into our house, you get my wife's name right.
I did things in bed with you that I haven't done with anybody since. He's like, your husband's right there. He's like, yeah, he knows. I know. I'm aware. You are a lucky
Arnie
man.
Arnie Palmy alert. This movie is
get
so
back here, fuck my wife. Man, it's like 20 miles.
You're really 20 miles.
Is that them?
Holy shit. And then there's the lines that when Terry goes to the ballet school to talk to his ex-girlfriend or whatever. He does the dance, obviously. He's like, if you were with me, you wouldn't be in the strip club shaking it for dollar bills.
These poles are horizontal.
Right. I think we all learned something about ourselves today. We all had our own ballet today. You're not helping. Sorry, you're not helping. And then of course there's the when they go to the Irish bar and Will Ferrell has to keep singing those depressing ass songs. He's like, why do you sing those depressing songs?
It was consensual.
Right. They had her way with her. It was consensual. Yeah. Why do you sing those depressing songs? Like, they're full of rich history.
We haven't even talked about the, like, I feel like the lion tuna speech is the thing that most people think of when they think of this movie.
It's so good. It's like, yeah, that didn't go the way you thought it would.
Or there's also the desk pop.
The desk pop. Again, there are so many, like Kara said, this cast is so great. Because even like Bobby Cannavale is just a random cop in this thing. And he's like immediately. Like, what is the last time he did a desk pop? Yeah, it's like, when was the last time he did a desk pop? And he just comes out right up. He's like, July.
he was like September 2013. Right.
He just comes up with a random number right on top of it because he knows what's about to happen. These guys fuck with these guys every day. You can tell. And it's even funnier because Damon Wayans at one point, Damon Wayans Jr., laughs. And he laughs exactly like his dad used to laugh on fucking In Living Color. It's weird. It's almost like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park with a ha ha ha. He's like ha ha ha.
I also love the payback with the desk pop when he's in the apartment and shoots the apartment pop.
Everybody knows it's not real. apartment pop.
They took our shoes again.
Right. Somebody, here's your gun back. And somebody put it like linseed oil or something on it.
Might want to write them a thank you note.
Right. And then, you know, and then there's just, again, like this whole movie, we could just sit here like quoting this entire movie. But then did you notice what Alan is drinking when he's working out in the montage where he and Terry are like separate and all that? He's working out. He's drinking a Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Oh, yeah. That was going to be one of my questions.
Nice. But, yeah. And there's the scene where Damon Wayans Jr. and Rob Riggle are at the school. It's like a fourth grade class.
Yeah.
And there's in there, and Damon Wayans Jr. has the lines where he's like, all right, here's some tips to stay out of jail. Try your best to not be black or Hispanic. And then they get the call over the radio, and Rob Riggle's like, gun, gun. He's like snapping his fingers, and the gun gets passed up from the back row. Who wants to go on a ride along? All right, you, come on. And the girl's like sliding back and forth.
Having Rob Riggle as a cop is one of my favorite things in a movie. Like, if Rob Riggle shows up if he shows up in general, I'll be happy. But if he shows up as a cop, I will be thrilled.
Yeah, because like there was that like period where he was in everything, and for some reason though, and I'm so glad we never did it, we never made him the star of a movie. He was always like the cameo character, the character actor or whatever, and because his brand of like yelling comedy, like where he just kind of screams in funny ways, like that was great, and it's great how he gets seasoned into movies. Mm-hmm. Whereas like when you look back at Superbad with Jonah Hill in that movie, he does nothing but yell and scream in that crackling voice. And it's so annoying. Just so annoying. It's like, yeah, I get it. You're a high school kid.
Adam Devine does that too.
Right. But it's like, there is too much of that. And Rob Riggle, thankfully, never crossed that line. You know, it was always just perfect for him.
Now, I do want a movie where it's like Danny McBride is a teacher and he's the main character of a show, but Rob Riggle's his principal and is like an occasional secondary character.
So you're saying you want the show Vice Principals, but with Rob Riggle instead of, I think, Walton Goggins, I think, is that character?
All right.
It's like, I don't know, man. I would not give up Walton Goggins, though. That dude's phenomenal.
I mean, I also want Danny McBride specifically as a teacher.
Yeah, Vice Principals.
Well, and something funny about this movie is because I have always been laughing so hard, it took me, I think, a good three times watching this movie to realize what the story was at the end, to realize like what Urshan was doing, how he was connected to Anheesh. I couldn't put it all together because I always missed stuff because I was laughing too hard.
Yeah, that's like, it's actually like they're gonna end up clearing out the police pension fund and using that to repay everyone.
Which is weird because it's a $32 billion pension fund. I believe it's billion with a B. It's like, that seems a bit high. I mean, if we're dedicating $32 billion to the NYPD police pension, they could probably be better at their jobs. They got that sitting there.
Also, when they're like targeting the lottery, I'm like,
right.
I'm like, the lottery's high, but
Yeah, but it's not Powerball every time, you know?
Yeah.
There are the smaller
Powerball, it takes a while to build up. I think the Powerball starts off at 20 million. And then,
yeah, you got to lose. It's got to, like, no one's got to win for a while before it hits the big number, you know?
Yeah, and even the big numbers usually, like, in the hundreds of million. And it, I don't think it ever gets to, like, 500 million.
No. And if it did, that's, like, the record Powerball or whatever. But yeah, everything about this movie is just phenomenal. And it's so well done. And even the unrated version is, like, a good amount longer. But the thing is, Adam McKay, before essentially Anchorman 2, where they have like three different versions of that movie because they did so much ad-libbing, Adam McKay is not like Judd Apatow, which would be like the 2000s to 2010s. Whereas Apatow's movies are all so long, and there's no reason that they should ever be over two hours, let alone over 2 hours. But because Judd Apatow doesn't know how to edit. He just does not know how to edit. Adam McKay, on the other hand, knows when he has a gold line and moves on. Like, he's like, we nailed it. It might be improv, but we fucking nailed it. This is the funny line. We're going with this. And there's, even in the unrated version of this, there isn't too much. I think it's except for Rob Hubel's appearance as the cop when he's describing what happened in the Prius. That keeps going because Hubel is just improvising. He's just making shit up. He makes up shit about like a raccoon placenta, and I think he even goes farther into it than he does in the regular one. But it just keeps going. The soup kitchen thing, all that. But you can tell that was like Hubel was nailing it the whole time. So we're not going to cut this. We're just going to let it stay in here. Whereas Apatow would let him go, let him get tired, let him run out of jokes. Let somebody else make a joke. Let him make a couple more bad improvisation jokes, and then he would end the scene. And it's like, you know, the movie doesn't need to be 3 hours long, Judd. You know, Adam McKay knows what he's doing here. He knows how to shave down to the best like lines of the movie. Again, though, probably the best decision he makes of this entire movie is having Ice-T be the narrator. Yes. I don't know. That shit was crazy.
That's the other thing. Really, I still like the Urshan giving them tickets to bribe them. He's like, gentlemen, you have a choice. Mamma Mia or Jersey Boys. And then what's the ticket he offers him at the end? And he goes, I'm not made of tickets.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember. There's so many bribes. I love the reactions where they're like loving it. They're into it. And then they stop. They go, oh, God damn it. No surprise, isn't it?
They have it again.
Like, how would you care for courtside Knicks tickets?
Which is when Allen gets hit on by Brooke Shields.
Oh, yeah.
Hit on by Brooke Shields and everything. Yeah.
What is it with you and hot ladies?
Right. And even the one at the end, like she's walking down the boardwalk at like a Coney Island or whatever. And she's like, hi. He's like, what the hell is happening right now? But yeah, this movie is just, it's so good. And if you really, if you haven't seen it, I honestly don't know what you're doing with your life, because you absolutely should. And it's only on Netflix until the 30th. So you only have a couple days left to watch it on Netflix at least.
But it was also on Hulu.
Was it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
What were you doing when you were 11? Like, when I was 11, I was auditing my parents, and there were grievances, and I was grounded.
There were discrepancies.
There were discrepancies. They were not happy.
Right. And yeah, it's so good. But yeah, so that's been the 2010s of our time capsules. The last week of our time capsules month. Hun, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Thank you for quizzing us on the other guys.
That was fun.
Yeah, it's a good time. Good questions. All right, so until Kara comes back again, Mike, where can people find us on the internet?
All right, so for your streaming pleasure, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, and just about anywhere else you get your podcast from because of Anchor. We're on like, I don't know, I'm just going to keep throwing out random numbers, like 17 different streaming services.
105 streaming services.
like 242 streaming. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Happy Hour Films Podcast. Go give us a like, give us a follow. You want to talk to me, go to Instagram. You want to talk to Ross, go to Facebook. You can find us on YouTube. We are having an ongoing series now where me and Ross get to force each other to watch things and we have to do reactions. Last night, I posted my reaction for Ross's Choice last week and it thoroughly broke me.
Yes. Yeah, I was watching that video the whole time. I'm like, I did it. I won. Like, I have destroyed him.
Like, I'm trying to get back at him this week, but he's already, like, so mentally disturbed that I don't think this is a battle I can win.
It's like getting into a land war with Asia. It's just not gonna happen, bro.
Yeah, it's like it's like Russians in World War II. He's gonna bury me with bodies.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, I am Afghanistan, motherfucker. But in case you haven't watched it, you should go check out Mike's reaction video to my pick of Society from 1989.
He was gonna get a nice comedy until I watched Society, and I'm like, I can't give you a nice comedy now.
That's the thing, like, now I'm thinking, like, after throwing Society at you, I'm trying to think of something, like, decent to throw at you now, but still not, like, good, but at least not Society of level star.
I'm,
like,
I'm trying to think what route I could go with to really win this battle, and because I won't win the mentally disturbed route. Nope.
Mike, I've been inside his head before, I can help you.
Yeah, you're not getting
it. I feel like I have to go with something so mind-numbingly dumb that Ross is just sitting there like, why am I watching this? What the fuck am I watching?
That is the way to go with me.
Yeah.
But all right, so yeah, check that out on YouTube. We had a couple reaction videos. We got Ms. Meadows from Mike, and for me it was Ghost Stories, the English dub, and then Society, and next time it'll be another one for me to watch and react to this upcoming.
Of course, I keep giving him anime, and that's going to continue until I find one that, like, I think he's going to like the one I gave him, despite it being disturbing.
It's like the beatings will continue until morale improves. But, so, next month, though, is the month of July. We are heading into a new theme, and we're still going to do some time capsules. We're still going to check in our time capsules, but again, this time, since we only have 4 weeks in July, we're going to hop in our time capsules, only go back to the 80s this time, the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and we're going to focus solely on action movies. So whereas we knocked out Death Wish, Bloodsport, The Crow, Crank, Guns Akimbo for this one, I think we're going to hit more of the I don't know, let's say wider appeal of the action movies, but we're I'm looking at the next week. So next week we're gonna be talking about the 80s. We're gonna go back to the 80s and we're gonna be discussing one of the greatest movies ever made in Commando. We're gonna be talking about one of the greatest movies ever made in RoboCop, and then we're gonna be discussing one of the greatest movies ever made, I guess, in Jackie Chan world, for Police Story. So I'm also looking at the future going in. We're getting back with Jean-Claude Van Damme. We're going to talk about him for a little bit. Jason Statham's coming back. Quentin Tarantino makes his first appearance on this show, actually. We get into that. And then we get into the man himself that we've been talking about but never actually talked about. Eventually, we'll talk about John Wick. And we're going to get into that with some others. It looks like Arnold's going to make another appearance as well with that. So, we are going to be discussing
Ross's month coming up. If you couldn't
Right. Damn right, man. It's going to be great. Yeah. So next week, 80s, Commando, RoboCop, Police Story. Kara, once again, thank you for coming back on.
Thank you.
And Mike, until next time, I have been Ross Bacon.
I have been Mike McWiggin, as Ross said.
That's right. And we'll see you guys next time. So long.